This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.
Ever wonder about the stories of the women around you?
We wanted to create an intentional space for women to share the wisdom they have gained through life experiences.
Tune in to be in awe of some of the wonder women in our midst. Wondering Woman on ORFM Dunedin.
Kia ora everyone, and welcome to the next episode of Wondering Women. I am your host today, Amy Armstrong, and I have a fun guest here with us today who is also a host on the show at times.
Hi.
Hi, Linnea.
Kia ora. Thanks for having me today, Amy. Funny to be on the other side of the recording desk.
I know. This is kind of fun. I always enjoy listening to your podcast, so now I'm going to listen to enjoy Yay. Hearing you talk to me for a little while. So kia ora and thanks for being here.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
So a lot of you will know Linnea from her hosting other shows on this podcast, but do you want to just tell us, remind us a little bit about yourself and where you're from? And
Yes, my name is Linnea. I am currently working at the Otago Peninsula Eco Restoration Alliance. It's an ecotourism place on the peninsula. They do wildlife tours, conservation, education, and rehabilitation. It's a very cool place.
Yeah, sounds awesome.
Yeah, and I graduated with a degree in ecology and anthropology at the end of last year. So Woo-hoo. Coming up on my 1 year anniversary of graduation.
Yeah, this year, this time last year, you would have been getting gowns.
Yeah, and getting ready. And I live in a flat with some wonderful people, including my sister at the moment. And I also volunteer or cooperate at Yours Cafe on Moray Place, which is a worker-owned co-op cafe and venue.
Cool.
And is a lot of fun.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of what I wanted to talk to you about today, or at least start our conversation with, this co-op work.
Mm-hmm.
So Yours Cafe, it's on Moray Place in Dunedin, if anyone's walking by. But so it's a co-op, right, or a cooperative.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about how it works and if people, can you pop in there for a coffee and a slice or what's its vibe?
So Yours, we are also called Otipoti Possibilities Cooperative. It is a worker-owned co-op, so that means that the people who work there sort of own the shares of the business, and we're a cafe and venue. So we do cafe things, coffee, little cabinet food. We have a kitchen menu, and we do events, oftentimes music. That has been, like, a lot of our events have been music because we are a non-licensed venue. We don't serve alcohol, which means that we are able to have underaged kids come and play because, you know, they're not allowed to play at bars and venues where there's like the restricted 18 plus.
Yeah.
And there aren't very many venues for high school students to play music at because of that, that aren't just like a scout hall, you know. so that's something that we do a lot of. And we do other kinds of events as well. We had some people kind of midway through the year ask if they could do a botanical ink making workshop. We've hosted fringe events like comedy. We actually had someone do ASMR. So it's very fun. It's really up to like what we want to host and who comes to us with their ideas of events. So that's kind of one side of it, is the events. And then I mentioned the cafe and the kitchen, and that's like the other big side of it. When it was started, some of the people who started it were very passionate about rethinking food systems and trying to come at food sourcing and food sharing, I guess, from the perspective of how can we do this in a way that doesn't harm the planet and doesn't harm people, because a lot of food systems rely on exploitation of some form, whether it is of people or of planet or of the planet or both, usually. And so this desire to, I think, make explicit some of the harm that happens in food systems, and also to say how can we do something different, even if that means making it a little bit more difficult, you know, because I think supermarket is convenience.
Yeah.
But that convenience, underneath all that convenience is layers of exploitation of people.
Yeah.
Which unfortunately can be a little bit unavoidable. So this was like an exercise in like how much can we avoid it, you know? Like let's give it a go and let's actually think about how we can source food in ways that are less like that don't participate in that exploitation and violence.
Wow. So does that mean like do people bring in food they've grown? Do you get rescue food? How do you source your food?
Yeah, we get food from all sorts. So we actually have a kind of food sourcing priorities. And that is like what, you know, what do we most desire for our food to be? And so often that's like local. So we'll go to the farmer's market. We have people that we do trades with. We bring bread. They kind of give us whatever's left at the end of the day, or we have like a little, you know, we'll buy things from different permaculture market gardens that are very local, like on the peninsula around town. Yeah, people bring in food, or like vegetables, you know, ingredients. And then there was a lot of research in the, when it was set up that went into, we call it farther away, but with trust. So, you know, places that we can visit that we may not, you know, on a daily basis be talking to the people making the food, but we know that they are also committed to trying to do things in a more sustainable and less exploitative way. So like some of our flour comes from Canterbury, spray-free.
Awesome.
And we also buy food from at least one cooperative in Sri Lanka. So we get our coconut-based products from them and some of our spices. And that's acknowledging as well that, like, we can't – you know, sometimes we do want food from other places. And especially if you are far from home, you may not be able to source the ingredients that you want to make food locally. But just because food, it grows far away doesn't mean that we have to assume that it's then made – in ways that cause harm. So that's quite cool to have this cooperative in Sri Lanka. I'm blanking on the name at the moment. That we order, that we get food from because, you know, it's those connections and trust across a larger distance, which is really nice.
Yeah, cool. And so is it vegetarian, vegan, omnivore? Like what sort of...
Yeah, we are mostly pretty much... mostly vegetarian on a day-to-day basis. Sometimes for special events we'll get some like free-range organic chicken or something, but mostly vegetarian. We get our milk from Holy Cow. They're a local, they supply at the farmer's market. They're very lovely, milk and butter from them. We try and find free-range eggs, so but we're not a vegan operation. But yeah, we do a lot of baking. We make sourdough bread. That's one of the big things I'm involved in. We like to say sourdough is the only real bread because, again, kind of thinking about industrial processes, to make bread on an industrial scale, like the bread you find in supermarkets, requires a lot of wrangling of microbes into how you want them to be. And the process happens very quickly, and so then you end up with it's just less nice for your tummy because the process of fermentation in sourdough breaks down things that we find harder to digest, and it's nicer for our gut microbiome. And it's just cool to have a slower process sometimes and to have to be in tune with what's happening in the sourdough starter with the yeasts and the bacteria. We call them the Tiny Friends Club.
And it's so yummy, sourdough bread.
Yeah.
But as you're talking, like, I'm thinking about, you said you're slowing down the process, but, and it is about slowing down, isn't it? Like, if you're going to be intentional about what you're eating and where you're sourcing it from, it is a slower process.
It is, yeah.
And it's, I think... you know, it's hard for people to make choices to slow down in life. I think we all need to do it a bit more, probably.
Yeah.
And I'm talking about myself as well. But and related to that, there must be a lot of volunteers involved with this co-op.
Yeah, so it is entirely volunteer run. No one gets paid.
Mm-hmm.
And we do it because we love it and we think it's important. And we want to provide that space for people to think about those things and for kids to have gigs for their friends and to feed people. You know, I think that's really important. The space... We do have the sort of political philosophy, I guess, of anarchism, which is the idea that the state and hierarchy is violent and so shouldn't exist, and that we actually have better ways of organizing ourselves in non-hierarchical ways that don't require force or, like, the threat of violence. But not everyone who participates necessarily aligns with that. But I think that's also what's quite special about it, is that everyone's still there. But yes, so we're all volunteers and there are no bosses or supervisors. And that's a really interesting way to run it. And some people can come into that kind of environment. It very much relies on good communication, which, being human, we're always working on. And it relies on people being able to take initiative. And so some people can come into a space like that ready to go, you know, with a lot of – with, like, confidence and with experience. And some people need a bit more guidance through that process. And that's cool. I don't think that we on a – maybe – and this is very contextual, right? But, like, societally, I think we're used to, you know, you go to a job and you're told what to do. Or in school, it's very structured. And there are lots of jobs out there that are very, you know, you need to know what you're – you have to have initiative to make it work. But I think it can be quite intimidating for people to come in and be like, well, who's in charge? Who do I go to? And so trying to have a system where we don't have people in charge, and yet we do also – there are people who have been there longer than others, people who know more about certain things. And so it can still create hierarchies. And so being aware of that kind of dynamic and trying to, you know, like I'm an oldest child, so I can very easily be like, I am now bossing people around. And so for me to be self-aware and say, since we're trying to do something different, I don't need to micromanage anyone. Yeah. I trust you to do your thing, and we can still ask each other questions and we can still, like, you know, get feedback. But I'm not the person. Nobody has the last say in anything. And so we operate on consensus-based decision-making, which means it comes from the idea of consent. Everyone consents to what's going on. It's often thought of in, like, a making a decision that everyone can live with. Because you may not be, like, thrilled about something that's happening, but as long as you can live with it, that's okay. And also based on the idea that the people who are most affected have the biggest say in a decision making. So for some things, everyone is quite affected, and for other things, less people are affected. And so that kind of keeps it from getting – the idea is that it keeps it from getting too big, where you don't need to ask every single person about every single decision that gets made.
Awesome. Fascinating. So if, like, obviously there's going to be some organization involved with this. So if you're having an organizational meeting, there's no chair, there's no – how do you organize yourself if no one's leading it?
We do tend to take turns facilitating meetings. It's not like – it's not a specific role.
That makes sense. So there's a facilitator, but it's just shared around.
And it's – and it's not, again, like – nobody should have the one and only say. Everyone kind of gets a chance to be heard.
Well, that's really cool. Like, that voice, every voice at the table has a say. Like, that's a that's so important. Very synodal, which is
And it's also, like, it is hard too, because people's personalities, you know, like, some people like to talk a lot, some people don't like to talk a lot. And so I think, like, I don't want to give the idea that it's just, like, we've got it down perfectly, and we still kind of run into all those similar things. that you would have in other meetings and other spaces. But
humanity is still present.
Yeah, exactly. But I think there's something very powerful about people thinking about how we run things and trying to just experimenting, being creative, doing things a bit differently. Yeah.
Yeah. Again, that intentionality is really present in all you're doing.
Yeah.
So the other thing I'm thinking about is how do you fund a place like this? Mm-hmm. So do you, when you have events, do you hire out the venue? Do you sell food and coffee, or how does the
Yeah, so we do – well, we have a pay what you want or pay what you can model. So we make food, we make coffee, and we do have – we don't have like a set venue fee. A lot of venues, if you want to play a gig somewhere, they'll have a fee that you have to pay to cover costs and usually a bit more. So we don't have a set thing like that, but we encourage people to think about ways that they can give back. Which does tend to be people usually pick money because that's kind of the easiest thing.
Yep.
They could give back in other ways. They could come and do a deep clean of the kitchen if they wanted. We would all love that. to anyone out there thinking about other ways. Yes. So we do pay what you want, and that's kind of for everything. And that does mostly – it does mostly pay the bills.
Okay.
I mean, none of us get paid, so we all work very hard to make it happen. And the idea with the pay what you want is to get people actually thinking about the value of what they're buying and the work that's gone into it. Because, you know, when you the monetary value of something means you don't really have to think about the work that went into it because we all know we have kind of agreed that this is how much this thing costs, and there's ways of calculating, you know, wages and hourly things and how much ingredients were in power, you know, like or power and heating and electricity, all that stuff. But then when you put it in the hands of people to decide how much they pay, a lot of people do find it very intimidating. And I think – and that's, like, honestly, fair enough. It's not something you're used to. And also it's a challenge to be like, how much is this worth? Like, how much work went into this? How much time? And how much can you actually afford to pay? Because I think there are plenty of people who come through who pay just what they can, you know, pay what you can, like they can't afford. And I think we also get people through who could afford to be more generous but aren't. And so that's an interesting dynamic because we don't tell people how much, and people often want to ask us, like, well, is this enough? And so trying to find that balance between, like, supporting people through what's, like, you know, sometimes a little bit uncomfortable and unusual, but also not, like, then come down hard on, like, you have to pay this much.
Yeah.
But, yeah, the idea of worth and, like, how much are things worth and money is very interesting, and it makes people uncomfortable talking about money.
I can imagine.
Yeah.
So do you get a lot of people in off the streets, or is it mostly people that know about it that arrive? And
bit of both. We have a lot of regulars. I think there's a lot of word of mouth. People will come for gigs. I think a lot of people will come for an event and then come back.
Cool.
But we do get – we have the doors open. We're right in the middle of town, especially at the moment. We get a lot of tourists. We get people who come in because they're just curious. We often get people who actually come in and still think it's the Asian, which is the restaurant that used to be there.
That place. I forgot about it. Yeah,
I think that has been happening less, but very occasionally we'll get people in. And so that's really interesting. You kind of, again, you see the whole, like, range of people.
Yeah. Very cool.
And that's really nice.
And do you have set hours, and you all the volunteers are just rostered on, or how does that work?
So part of our, like, kind of doing things differently anarchist principles is that people roster themselves on. We do try and have set hours, but part of rostering it on is that you can kind of be like, I'm done now. But we're usually open from 2 to 7 on Wednesday and Thursday, and 12 till, if we have an event on, like, 9, Friday, Saturday, and then 12 to 6 on Sunday.
Okay.
So it's kind of late. It's like an afternoon into the evening opening hours.
Which is good because it can be hard to find a place open in Dunedin after. Like,
it is.
To get
so we do get
in.
People, especially on the Sundays, you know, when everything closes at like 2.
I know. Even weekdays, a lot of cafes close at like 3 in the North End anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's been really fun to be a part of, and it's been a big learning experience as well.
Yeah. I'm just – obviously, you can tell I'm very fascinated by how it all works because – I think often we just go through life, at least in the West, Western economies, that things are just work one way. And obviously politics can vary and all of that. But in general, there's this understanding of
the way things are done.
Yeah. And cost, like supply and demand. Yep. And but it's sort of false in that, as you say, a lot of it is done with exploitation of land and people. And it's just really, like, I love it that you're just there. Even the people that come in might get a bit of surprise. Oh, what's this about?
Yeah.
And just ask some questions and maybe go away thinking a little bit differently.
Yeah.
Like, that's a real mission in itself, isn't it?
Yeah. And I think, like, the idea that there's only one way to do things, like, because we have this model of how things work and our economy is a capitalist economy. And so, you know, how that works is you put money in and you do your wages, you do your work, you get your wages. You have to do your cost benefit analysis. You make a profit or you don't. Kind of, we know that there are lots of other things happening underneath or like alongside, I think, kind of what you might think of as like traditional capitalist business. But there's not a lot of, I think, in kind of dominant ideas of how things are done, imagination for how you might do things differently. Mm. Even though I do think people actually are doing things differently, it's just kind of quite hidden. Or it's like, you know, like people are out here trading vegetables with their neighbors and people are going blackberry picking. And like those things, I think it's easy to say, oh, capitalism is the only thing that exists. Mm. But I think there are lots of kind of in the cracks.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how we at the co-op, one of the ways that we sort of think about it is like finding, like living in the cracks and like finding other ways of living, knowing that what we're doing isn't going to like change an exploitative system all on our own.
Right.
But still thinking that it's important to do something differently and to kind of widen those cracks to make room for other possibilities.
Cool.
And it reminds me a lot of the Catholic worker, at least the way that I like to think about it. I can't speak for everyone at the co-op because no one's in charge. I can speak from my experience, but I read Dorothy Day's book, Loaves and Fishes, recently, and the way that she talks about the way that they do things or they were doing things when she was writing, you know, and that like reliance on generosity and people coming up to them and being like, this is crazy. Like, how is this work? What are you doing? But then the sense that it was a very needed thing that they were doing and that it was in fact, you know, the work, the important thing to be doing. And I don't think that a cafe is necessarily like the be-all, end-all way to try and do things differently. But I think it is really important to think about that and to give it a go. And I think, like, and to read that book and see all the kind of same issues they've run into are, like, you know, things about finances, like, those kind of – and personalities and, like, the very, like, human stuff – has existed forever and probably will continue to exist.
And in every system.
Yeah. But to say, how can we make a world where it's easier for people to treat each other well? And how can we make a world where there is justice and where people care for one another? Because,
love it. And actually, Dorothy Day, I know she's not technically a saint yet, but
She
her feast day, quote unquote, has just happened because she died about this time of year.
Yeah,
I don't even know what year, but I saw it posted somewhere.
Yeah.
So she's a real hero of mine. So just real quickly, if anyone wants to look her up, she's a woman who started a movement of hospitality, really grassroots, much like yours Cafe is doing, and just looking after those who – there's a lot of soup kitchens named after her.
Houses of hospitality.
She's a cool woman.
And they did a lot of also nonviolent direct action against war and nuclear weapons and conscription, like the draft, that kind of stuff.
Pacifists.
So they were connecting their kind of like day-to-day work of feeding people with these kind of larger systems that deal violence to people both at home and overseas, if you think about war and state violence.
Gosh, we could do a whole nother show on that, couldn't we?
Yeah.
But on that note, our time is up here, but I just really, really appreciate you coming in and talking about
this. Thanks for asking good questions.
Yeah, the Yours Cafe Co-op. It's on Moray Place in Dunedin.
43 Moray Place.
I encourage you to go in and check it out and pay what you think it's your food and drink is valued at, and maybe inquire about volunteering. Are you looking for volunteers?
Yeah, we always want people to come and help out. You can just start by doing the dishes, you know?
Yeah.
Or hanging about and having a yap.
So if you have extra time these holidays or you want to do something new and, you know, give in a new way in the new year, just go check out Yours Cafe.
Yeah.
Thanks, Linnea, for chatting with us today.
Thanks for having me today, Amy.
Awesome. Ka kite anō, everyone.
Ka kite anō.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.